south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, so I'm at the house of an expat who came down to one of my earlier Expat Insider seminars many years ago, and guess what? He's living down here now in a very luxurious condominium / residential colony. You know, they call subdivisions colonies down here, like, you know, a bunch of ants or bees. And to us expats and gringos, it's always a little creepy when you tell someone you live in a colony, una colonia, like George Orwell, 1984. Anyway, where I'm doing the show right now, we're talking about houses that in the suburbs of Chicago would be upwards of probably $300,000 to $2 million bucks. In his house, I'd say in Chicago, it'd go for around $600,000. The one my friend's renting anyway, and he pays around $1,000 a month. I know I could get his landlord down to maybe $700,000 or $800,000. But that's just me. I like to beat on these landlords. You know, I was just talking to a lawyer the other day, too, and he said something very interesting that I never heard out of a Latin lawyer's mouth before. He said, you know what? Any price people are asking, offer them half. Well, never heard anything like that coming out of a Latin lawyer's mouth before. In reality, a kind of a backhanded admission that there's a big-ass real estate bubble here. And then he said something that I've said a million times. They'll probably be offended at first if you offer them half, but if you have the dough to pay 6 months or a year ahead, you'll probably get the deal. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? Like I've said repeatedly, throughout Latin America, it's a renter's market, except, of course, when you're in the center of a very big city where the four-star hotels and ambassador's quarters are, then it's artificially pumped up, and what you pay $600 or $700 for when you're out a couple of miles, you'll pay $2,000 or $1,500 for in the so-called Zona Rosa or Zona Viva area, where they've got all the convention centers and first-world hotels, and, of course, upscale restaurants and discos. So anyway, I'm not in the coffee fields today. I'm doing a remote here. You could probably tell by the microphone sound quality, but I'm working on ways to improve that. Anyway, as usual, since I'm an engineer and I built 13 or so houses and business offices throughout Latin America in the past 20-something years, I'm always checking out the way things are built and the construction details. And let me tell you, the details in this place are horrendous. And I'm talking about a very upscale community with many houses that look impeccable from the street. Especially the gardens. Man, the Latins have that down. On top of that, there's no snow, so there's all those tropical fruits and flowers to choose from. But as you get closer to the house from the street, for example, once you're inside and you go into the visitor's bathroom, you'll see in these upper middle class and high-end houses, beautiful marble and granite countertops, the real thing, most often with very high-end, excellent quality sinks. But the griferia, that would be the plumbing fixtures, can be and often are garbage. The fact is, this place even has window screens, which is kind of a rarity in Latin America. Really, only in upscale neighborhoods will you ever find custom screens. But what to my wondering eyes did appear? Splatters of paint all over the shower and on the screens. Ugh. And looking up at the light fixtures, you can see they never ran masking tape. The painters just came right up to the edge of the fixtures, kind of free-handed it, and slopped it here and there, kind of like a sixth grader might do if you gave him a brush and said, here, do your best and have a go at it. And as usual, the closets don't have ventilation or a skylight to burn off the humidity, so my gringo buddy has done what most Latins would never do. He bought a couple of high-powered dehumidifiers, and they're running constantly in the closed closets. He says they pull out at least a gallon a day. So he had to buy those things in the first place. Electricity is expensive here, so he's got a high electric bill. But the problem never had to happen in the first place. If, when they built a place, they would have put a few ventilation slots at the bottom of the door and a few ventilation slots above the door near the ceiling to get some air circulating. That'll help, but it's not the total answer. You really need the sun to peek through every once in a while through a skylight. I made that a priority in the last few houses I've built because, after the fact, you just can never solve that problem without a dehumidifier. And then my buddy says, Johnny, we know you drink coffee. So they went into the cupboard, grabbed a Bodum, you know, one of those French presses, and said, have at it. He said, my wife and I are tea drinkers. No coffee for us. But please, put the spent coffee grounds in the garbage or the toilet, because, he said, I had a couple of bad experiences with coffee drinkers when my maid put the coffee grounds from the Bodum directly into the sink. In no time, it clogged the damn thing up and caused a big problem. He said the next day he had a bad case of plunger arm. We'll leave that to the imagination. So why is it when gringos and expats build houses from scratch and they're astute enough to know they better force the architect and builder to go by the plans? In those cases, when the plans are strictly followed, you can put practically anything down the sink drain, including your neighbor's kid. Especially if you've installed a tritadura, which is an incinerator or garbage disposal. Which, by the way, is something you'll never find in middle and lower middle class homes. And for those few courageous Latins who buy one and have it installed, they find out soon enough. It really was a bad idea because the maid or cleaning lady, within a very short period of time, will destroy it with plastic and metal objects. Oh, and speaking of maids and cleaning ladies, my friend, whose house I'm doing the show at right now, says he lets his maid do everything except the laundry because she destroyed the dryer and now she's afraid to touch the washing machine. And get this, after he gave her multiple lessons on how to use the thing, basic lessons, repeated over and over again, still, she's afraid to use it and prefers to wash the clothes by hand outside in the basin called the pila. And he said she was hiding it from them for a long time. In other words, she was doing the laundry and they thought she was doing it in a washing machine. But actually, when they'd go out of the house for a while, she'd run over to the backyard pila and wash them by hand. She was simply afraid she'd screw something up and wreck the washing machine. So my gringo friend and his wife, who get this, have not only a full-time cleaning lady, but a full-time nanny for their kids. Turns out, pretty much the only heavy-duty cleanup chores or manual labor they do is the laundry. Though their maid does iron clothes. And man, is that a luxury. Back in the States, I remember I never ironed a single thing. Well, maybe a collar once in a while when I had a big event. But man, I can't think of anybody who likes to iron. What a luxury when you find out your maid is more than happy to do it. And that they're very good at without any training at all. But getting back to the original topic about living in an upscale neighborhood and renting an existing house or buying an existing house, you're going to have defects all over the place that you never saw when you first walked in. But after a while, they really can wear on you, and some of them can be fixed, admittedly. You get some decent painters and you tell them to use masking tape and tarps, etc. Something they're just not used to, even the so-called professionals. You'll have to train them up. But the ever-present humidity in the closet thing, and even if you're in the Altiplano where the temperature's always pretty much perfect, you got that six-month rainy season, and when it rains extremely heavy for 2 or 3 hours, or maybe even overcast for a couple of days, the humidity is ever-present. That is, until the sun comes out, and it usually does every day, even during the rainy season, and burns it off. Except in enclosed spaces like dark rooms and closets. Though admittedly in the Altiplano regions, the humidity is so much less than it is on the coast and at lower altitudes. So during the six-month dry season, there's really never a humidity problem. And if there is, the sun soon takes care of it. And man, let me tell you, you guys and gals out there thinking about living the beach life, for those of you who live near the oceans now, you Florida people and such, you know what salt water and salt water breezes can do to metal. Even stainless steel, and believe me, the only thing that can really withstand salt water and salt weather mists for any length of time is anodized aluminum. And still, that won't last forever. So if and when you come down here to Latin America and you decide to have a beachfront residence, when your builder or architect gives you the choice of your windows and window frames, do not select wood, do not select plain aluminum window frames that are not anodized. Anodized, of course, has a color to it. It's black or gray or brown or bronze colored. And you know, I've been down here a long, long time, and that's the only metal product when you're close to the beach or at low altitudes that stands the test of a salt water mist environment. Now, of course, you're going to pay a little extra for anodized aluminum everything, including doors and whatever, but do it. Now, in the last few years, I've seen a lot of nice plastic window frame products, some really heavy-duty stuff, too. Of course, there's a lot of cheap junk as well. And some of the higher-end products really work well down here, but don't pick white, because eventually it turns kind of milky gray and scruffy looking, and you just can't revitalize it again, especially the parts that get a lot of sun exposure. Though, admittedly, they do look good for a couple of years. But then what? Okay, so here's another thing you have to look out for when renting or buying, and it's very important if you're going to build. Now, at first, this might sound like a small thing, but just for a second, look at your wall outlets. You know, where you plug in stuff. Yep, I'm looking at one right now. They all look pretty much the same, don't they? Things plug in and out of them. I'm here to tell you there's a big difference in the ones that you select or your builder selects when you have them installed. So where I'm doing the show from right now, this is, like I said, an upscale house built probably only 8 years ago or so, and still there are nowhere enough wall outlets. That means if you just have the basic electronic stuff and gadgets, there are going to be extension cords and cheater plugs everywhere. Not a good look for a newer, nicer home. But, you know, you really can't do much about that, especially if you're renting. And besides, the walls are concrete. So to add an extra outlet or two in a room is no do-it-yourselfer's job, let me tell you. That means if and when you're going to build anything, you have to double up on what the architect seems to think are adequate outlets. And don't forget to put at least one in every closet, because there's a severe shortage of outlets in closets, even in million-dollar homes. All right, aside from that, this morning I set up my little recording workstation, found a nice little corner to set up in where there was a wall outlet, plugged in my handy little outlet strip, and guess what? I met some unusual resistance while putting the plug into the wall socket and suddenly heard a nasty little crack. I actually snapped the outlet in half. And the plug still wasn't seated all the way in, so I moved over to the next plug. You know, they're called duplex outlets. There's two outlets, and I plugged that one in. That one seemed to seat quite normally, slipped right in, no problem. Then I was thinking because the other half of the outlet broke, I decided for no other reason than to check it, to pull the plug out and reinsert it. And guess what? As I pulled the plug out, the entire faceplate and the guts of the thing, including the wires, pulled right out of the wall. And now pretty much the whole thing was wide open, sort of dangerous looking. You wouldn't want cats or dogs who are at that level walking up and poking their nose in there. Kids maybe, but not your innocent pets, that's for sure. So what's the point here? Aha, well here's something I don't think I ever mentioned in my 760 plus shows. Well, just like up in the States, when you build a house, your architect or builder will say, all right, let's pick out the fixtures. And many times, especially up in the States, if it's a middle-class style home, the new owner or the guy who's footing the bills, that would be you, might just say, well, my style is colonial or modern or whatever. Go ahead, you're the builder or you're the architect, you pick them out. Or show me a few options on the internet, whatever. Well, let me tell you, down here in Latin America, you don't want to let your builder or architect pick out your grifería, that would be your plumbing fixtures, or your electrical fixtures either, that would be your switch plates, outlets, lamps, chandeliers, outdoor lights, whatever. That is, without some major involvement from you. Because not only do architects and builders here in Latin America have pretty crappy taste, though there are exceptions, there always are exceptions. The important thing is, these days anyway, you have to know there are three or four different qualities in the electric fixtures and plumbing fixtures too. And it's all about price. Surprise, surprise, you get what you pay for. Good example, we're talking about electrical outlets here. If you take a walk into any electric supply store, you know, sell wire and lights and conduit, connectors, all kind of fixtures. If you ask them to see the different kinds of wall outlets and you think, well, they're all the same, right? You'll see they'll generally stock items that are supposed to function identically from three, four, or even five companies. Of course, they all pretty much look the same and they mount the same. And the difference is mostly where they're made. For example, in Central America, you can buy ultra-cheap wall sockets coming from China for around $1 apiece, or slightly better ones coming from Costa Rica for maybe $1.25 apiece. If not Costa Rica, they're coming from some other Latin country like Mexico or Brazil. Next, there are some pretty solid-looking heavier ones, though they're exactly the same size. What I mean is when you put it in your hand, it actually weighs more, it's heavier. And you'll see they come in a nicer package, a real box, instead of just a plastic wrap. And yes, sometimes you'll see the box has a little red, white, and blue flag on it, leading the uninitiated to believe they're manufactured and made up in the States, but they're not. They're just designed up there and made in China like everything else. But they really are quite a lot better and will last a hell of a lot longer than the previous ones mentioned. And then there's the one or two high-end options. Generally a designer-type socket that looks rather cool and sleek, brushed aluminum, fancy European designs. Usually they're coming from Europe, even made in Europe, not outsourced to China, coming from Italy, Spain, Germany, whatever. They are slick looking and you see them in a lot of newer upscale homes, but they're pricey, something like $2 to $2.50 an outlet. But what you have to remember is you're going to live in that house a long time unless you're building it to rent to someone else or sell. And you see, that's the big problem. when other people are building houses to sell them or rent them, inevitably they pick the cheapest, junky wall outlets because they all look the same. In the end, it's almost never worth it to go cheap. Think about this. Suppose you have 50 wall outlets in your house, and you buy the ultra cheapies. That's only a $50 outlay for the whole house. And guaranteed, in a couple of years, you're going to have trouble with some of the ones you use quite a bit, like, for example, in the kitchen. Now, suppose you selected the much better quality one for $2 a piece. Wow, you spent a whole extra $50 to get most likely a lifetime of service out of those things without a problem. Oh, and one note about buying the designer outlets, especially the ones from Italy. And one of the more pervasive electrical outlet and socket producers from Italy, I think it's Toscano or something like that, they've got big, beautiful wall displays in all the upscale hardware stores here in Latin America. But are they heavy duty? Do they last? Well, who knows? Look, if you're buying the Ferrari of wall sockets, you're buying it because it looks cool. Ask any Ferrari owner. Unfortunately or fortunately, Italian products look so damn cool. But man, have you run into any crazy happy Fiat owners lately? Oh, and believe it, the high-end hardware stores are landing here in Latin America, even franchises from the States. Sure, every couple of blocks in a residential area, you'll find a mom-and-pop hardware store, but the big ones are moving in. Which means in most medium and large-sized Latin cities, you can get almost everything you can get at Home Depot. So the bottom line is, when you're going to build a home, go with your architect or builder to the plumbing supply store, pick out your fixtures, but stay far away from that lightweight plastic junk. When it comes to plumbing fixtures, the heavier, the better. Preferably a common brand you know from the States, like American Standard, Chicago Faucet, or Moen. Sure, they're no longer made in the States anymore, but they're heavy-duty, they weigh a lot, and they last. Not to mention, they stock original replacement parts. Now, part of the pervasive problem you see here in Latin America is, even in high-end homes down here, some of the faucet fixtures are almost 100% plastic, and you know how long that stuff's going to last. Again, we're talking very high-end homes. What are these people thinking? So in the end, pick brand names you know, and never, never go cheap, even if it's in the laundry room or the maid's quarters. The fact is, that's where you want the real heavy-duty stuff, because it's the maid, the nanny, and the gardener, if you have them, who are really going to give those fixtures a workout, over-tightening water valves, etc. So what do you do if you're renting a place and you have crummy plastic plumbing fixtures and cheap-ass wall sockets, they're called tomo corrientes down here, that after a few uses pull right out of the wall? So what do? You call the landlord, right? Well, not so fast. Time for another thing you probably didn't know. Throughout Latin America, when you rent a place, it's almost always the case that you're responsible for any and all repairs, not the landlord. So unless you get an absolute gem of a landlord, you might as well skip the midnight phone call complaining there's no hot water or the shower doesn't work. Because even if he or she likes you and says they're going to send someone over to fix it, remember, while you have goosebumps on your goosebumps in the shower, he's on mañana time. That means tomorrow is a couple of days away. So do note, in most every rental contract, you'll find you're responsible for repairs of your own unit. I know, it's hardly fair, but that's the way it is. Oh, and another thing, because here in Latin America, a handshake does not constitute a deal. That means most all landlords have you sign a contract. But know this, in the vast majority of cases when you rent a place and have a contract, it's not as simple as you think. You can't just sit down with the landlord and you two guys agree on the contract and sign it. In most all cases, I'd say 95% of them anyway, your landlord will drag his or her lawyer in, you'll sign the contract, the lawyer will certify it, then it's you who will have to pay the lawyer's fee, around $50 or so. All right, then what happens if you say to the landlord, I don't want your lawyer, let's use mine, because maybe he's your friend and he'll do it for nothing, or he's on retainer, whatever. Well, no dice. Your landlord's going to want his lawyer there. I know, it's all a bunch of extra paperwork and BS. It all goes back to Latin culture and the difficulty in being a landlord. They say being a landlord in the States is a big pain in the ass. Well, just picture a pain in the ass complicated by a very nasty set of hemorrhoids. They say that's what it's like being a landlord in Latin America. And that's because Latins are extremely slow and bad payers. And landlords make promises all the time and lie their asses off too. Which is why landlords love gringo tenants so much. Not only do we pay on time, and many times way in advance, which is something unheard of in Latin society, and most times we actually leave our rentals in better condition than how we found them. Not always, but it's true, we almost never leave the place worse off than when we first entered it. By the way, I've seen many a gringo and expat come down here to Latin America, rent a place for $300, $400, $500 a month at had a lot of superficial defects in it, and after a few months of tinkering away and hanging out at hardware stores, it becomes an absolute showplace. Yep, gone are the paint splatters and the dirty, grungy light switches. Suddenly you can see things as they are naturally, because they've changed all those ugly, glaring, stupid fluorescent light bulbs to those nice little LED lights and fixtures. Oh, and that's another thing. I'd say 95% of indoor Latin America is dramatically underlit, and those hideous fluorescent bulbs are everywhere. I mean, how depressing is an environment like that? Problem is, those ugly fluorescent jobs are quite noxious and poisonous if they break. You know, mercury and other toxic gases. And eventually, as they burn out and end up in garbage cans and dumps, they all break. Well, from the beginning, those things were really a bad idea, but at least they were a short transitional stage to LEDs. All right, enough said about that. You know, lots of times expats come down here, stay for a while, and they move back to the States because they just can't make the transition. Of course, there's a lot of reasons that can happen. Sometimes couples come down and one wasn't really interested in doing it in the first place. That person came down reluctantly, and that wears on them, and, well, that causes a rift that gets bigger and bigger, and one or both of them ends up going back. So on that note, here's a little article that talks about that very subject, entitled, When Gringos End Up Going Back Home. And I'll paraphrase and condense this a little bit because I can. It starts with the question, do I really belong here in Latin America? And then it states, expats, some of them anyway, often mourn for their own culture, which is why so many gringos and expats whose Spanish really sucks end up on the gringo tourist trail. Because it really is, and it was for me too when I first came down, a soft landing. All right, so this article is written by a guy named Robert Catlino. He's living in Cuenca, Ecuador. Then he says, so you've been here in Cuenca or another Latin country for a spell, and after a year or two, you're asking yourself, do I really belong here? And why do some expats stay and others leave? Now, as for me, Johnny, I've seen them come and go. In fact, you might say I have a sixth sense about sizing up whether a person's going to be able to hack it as an expat. Generally, I can easily tell when I'm doing a phone consult or even when I'm sitting down face-to-face talking with someone for a few minutes. I'm thinking, here's a guy who's really going to make it, and this other guy, well, it's a crapshoot. Though I'm not infallible, I've been wrong a few times. Usually, I can tell who's going to end up on the gringo tourist trail forever and ever, and who's going to venture out, learn Spanish, and blend in with the culture. But that's a topic for another show. We'll get to it. So the article goes on to say, many immigrants and expats experience a loss of their culture. Because it's true, when you move, you lose your birth country values, the traditions of your homeland, your songs and familiar food, which is probably why a lot of people go to Costa Rica. Because it really was the first place in Latin America to have all the comfort foods, fast foods and junk foods, just like back home. Then it says, and psychologists say, and generally I could give a rip what psychologists say, but it's here in the article. Social status and significant relationships will also be lost, which is true. But then again, like expat Eddie always says, all those time vampires, jerks, and deadbeats in your own family, you can leave them far, far behind. But if you don't move, they'll always be in your life, popping up like bad pennies. But who knows? Maybe you're living in Argentina, Belize, Honduras, whatever, and they're still sucking energy from you on WhatsApp or Skype. My advice, find that off switch. And another reason expats leave is because of perceived safety issues. Mostly because they don't know the country at all. They haven't been around. They don't know the neighborhoods. All they have is what they've seen on the internet, or maybe from Skyping with a few of their friends that made the move earlier. It's also true a lot of expats are coming from places that were dangerous, like me from Chicago. But I also know Chicago and which places and neighborhoods I'd never want to work, play, live, hang out, or walk through alone. And of course, when moving to a Latin country, you've got no handle on that whatsoever, except for what you've got from the net and heard from maybe your friends living down there already. So it is natural, anyway, for you to feel a decrease in safety and connectedness to others, and you just might have some trust issues with the new people you meet. Unless, of course, you're Canadian, then you trust everyone, eh? Then you've got that language barrier, and if you're not on the tourist trail, you're completely disconnected from deep communication with others. So definitely, you'll be stereotyped by the locals. Gringos, we have our stereotypes, you know. Though they're almost always positive and good, there are things about it the Latins just don't get and why they call us gringos locos. Though they always say it with a smile. Like, for example, the other day I went shopping with one of my expat buddies. He also came down to one of my earlier expat insider seminars and ended up staying. Anyway, we were in the checkout line at a big Latin supermarket. He slipped the lady who was bagging the food about $1 in the local funny money. He handed it to her, and at first she didn't take it. She looked at him, looked around, and thought it was a gag, because as it turned out, no one had ever given her a tip before just for bagging groceries. And since we're way off the Gringo Tourist Trail, 99.99% of the clients are Latinos, who would never think to tip like that. Now, this Gringo friend of mine, I know him well, and he does that all the time. He's a hell of a nice guy, and when people see him doing that, they say, man, you're generous. And he says, well, it's my way of paying things forward. And he says, the fact is, they're going to remember me. And someday, who knows, I might have a flat tire in a parking lot. And guess who's going to be the first one out there to help me? Not that I'm waiting for some kind of reciprocation. I'm not. Hey, if a buck tip puts a genuine smile on the face of somebody, why not? Then, of course, I reminded him that Latins are always smiling, buck tip or not. Then he said, yeah, but that'll give him something to talk about at the dinner table. And that, in a way, is why Costa Rica, Cancun, and all those gringo tourist traps have gotten out of hand. When you repeatedly hand out money like that, people get used to it and come to expect it, which is why it's a great thing to do every once in a while, but not to the same people over and over. Though many fresh green gringos and expats think I'm a jerk for saying so. That is, until they've been down a while and see the effect of spreading a lot of dough around for basically just doing their jobs. That can't help but alter the Latin stereotype of us. Now, we can't help the way we stereotype others, and they can't help the way they stereotype us. And, you know, you hear people say all the time, you can't generalize. To which I say, if you're walking down the street, and you see a couple of skinheads with face and neck tattoos walking straight at you, are you going to be the one to move as they pass, or are you going to wait for them to move? You know, they might be born-again Christians. So when you come to Latin America, you're going to drag along a lot of your own values with you, which is a good thing in a way. Why, when a gringo sets up a business or moves into a subdivision, his house and his business always seem to be a cut above the Latin competition. That's part of your gringo advantage. But then there's that creeping problem of not being able to accept the values of the culture you've landed in. And sure, some of the things you'll never accept, like the way people drive and the conditions of most bathrooms. But as expat Eddie likes to say, any bathroom is better than an outhouse. Sometimes. Now, the more you're on the Gringo Tourist Trail, the more you can cling to your first world cultures and attitudes. And conversely, the more you can avoid dealing with the culture you've dropped yourself into. Which is why so many expats will go to the same restaurants other expats go to. The food might suck, but it's all about the fact that the menu's in English and the waiters speak English too. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!